Epilogue. Regarding the life and times and deaths of Marilyn Monroe, John F. Kennedy, and Dorothy Kilgallen, distortions of history abound to this day by those with little concern for the truth. By presenting accurate details based on credible accounts from primary sources whose powers of recollection are worthy, and, when required, secondary sources whose accounts are confirmed, all while humanizing each of them regarding their private lives with an emotional slant, the hope is that fresh perspectives will overpower many of the myths and outright stereotypical deceptions clouding the accomplishments of these three 20th century icons. Accepting the challenge of doing so was a monumental task akin to attempting to assemble a giant-sized jigsaw puzzle. Hopefully, the result is a definitive book that provides important historical markers for the three subjects researched. Concerning those who have either directly distorted history or become enablers by remaining silent when they know of these distortions through cover-ups, they must be included in what may be called a wall of shame. Since any sort of injustice must not be accepted but instead exposed, each should be held accountable for their actions or inaction, for the false witness they were or still are to the truth, especially when it comes to Marilyn, JFK, and Dorothy being denied justice when they died. Regarding the 35th President of the United States, no one is more responsible for covering up the truth about his death than FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, who, instead of upholding the law, as was his duty, acted in his own self-interest by shouting to the world the ludicrous Oswald alone cause of JFK's death when he knew this to be false. Alongside him stand the enablers, every member of the rubber-stamp Warren Commission, who issued a report Kilgallen aptly called laughable. Through these men, who cared little for the facts, people around the world have been brainwashed with untruths continuing to this day. Perpetuating Hoover and the Commission brainwashing through the years have been authors such as Vincent Bugliosi, who wouldn't even admit in his book Reclaiming History, should be retitled Distorting History, Kilgallen interviewing Jack Ruby, Gerald Posner, chief advocate of the ludicrous Oswald alone theory, Bill O'Reilly, who wouldn't know the truth if it hit him in the face, James Patterson, co-author of a novel about the Kennedys promoted as their story when it was infested with untruths, filmmaker Oliver Stone, JFK, a movie riddled with mistakes, and other so-called experts that have endorsed what the bogus Warren Commission concluded. Even the House Select Committee on Assassinations in the 1970s, though decisive that Oswald had not acted alone, never went far enough to discover the truth, providing yet another false front about the assassinations. If one reads the commission reports, the books mentioned, or other sources of ill repute, or watches videos about the assassinations, one constant remains. There is absolutely no mention of Dorothy Kilgallen's research or any mention of the most credible documents in history about the assassinations, the Jack Ruby trial transcripts. Without their being included, any and all books, articles, and presentations are pure rubbish, to be discounted for sure. The worst offenders today are the powers that be at the Sixth Floor Museum at Dealey Plaza in Dallas, who continue to deceive students, teachers, researchers, and the general public. How so? By promoting the museum as a priority visit for those interested in learning about all sides of the story regarding the JFK and Oswald assassinations. Attracting more than 400,000 visitors each year, the museum calls its home, the Texas School Book Depository Building, the landmark that changed the world, when it is nothing of the sort, since it was JFK's death that changed the world. Touting itself as celebrating the legacy of President John F. Kennedy, the museum claims its exhibits provide accurate and impartial information, including the most recent developments in evidence concerning the tragic events that happened on November 22, 1963. Each and every one of the proclamations made by those who operate the museum and the board of directors at the Dallas County Historical Foundation, packed with old-line Dallas big-shot cronies who have no integrity, is untrue while the museum hides behind the mask of stating that it is keeping the legacy of JFK alive. Through false advertising and deceptive practices on a daily basis, students, teachers, researchers, and the general public are hoodwinked into believing they will learn the truth about the JFK and Lee Harvey Oswald assassinations when, in reality, the museum is nothing short of being a shrine to Oswald and the ludicrous Oswald alone theory, which, to date, more than 85% of the American people believe is pure bunk. Basically a cash cow that is a true stain on the city of Dallas, the museum prohibits any research materials adverse to the Oswald alone theory while providing outdated exhibits, an audio tour that includes information at least 5 years old, educational programs on its website that are completely misleading, a bookstore that only stocks Oswald alone books, and restricts program speakers to only those who advocate the Oswald alone theory. When soliciting donations to the museum, the false advertising continues based on lies told about the worthiness of the museum's collection. First-hand knowledge of this sad state of affairs comes from a personal experience by this author who offered to donate Dorothy Kilgallen and my research in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice, as well as a hard copy of the Jack Ruby trial transcripts, the most important documents about the assassinations in history, to the museum only to be rebuffed since CEO Nicola Langford, curator Stephen Fagan, curator of collections Lindsay Richardson, and the board must continue to promote the Oswald alone theory so the museum stays relevant. Worse, Langford, Fagan, Richardson, and the board members are distorting history even to the extent of permitting an outlandish presentation about the Ruby police files by Dallas Judge Brandon Birmingham and attorney Toby Shook, ignoring all aspects of the trial transcript evidence. If one watches the YouTube video and has any sense regarding the truth about what happened in Dallas, it is quite evident mistakes of historical importance run rampant. To alert the educational community in Texas to the deceptive practices poisoning the minds of young students, this author wrote a lengthy letter to Mike Morath, the Texas Commissioner of Education, in August 2020 that was copied to educational leaders across Texas. To read the entire letter, which includes all of the distortions of history within the museum, visit tinyurl.com/YBUFSLB4. All letters lowercase. As 2021 dawned, this author was intent on exposing the museum's fraudulent practices to the extent of causing it to be closed by the end of the year. With the support of Dallas officials who do care about the truth, such is a worthy goal. Regarding Marilyn Monroe's life and times and her death, the list of those authors and other so-called experts who have shown little care for the truth, both during her career and then after she died, could fill a 1,000-page book. Distortions of history abound by those who speculate regarding her early life, her climb to stardom, her personal life, and her fame by proclaiming Marilyn to be the dumb blonde, the sex symbol with the sexy voice, who was, in their opinion, nothing more than a woman with very loose morals. To blunt these stereotypical perceptions, what is missing, on a deliberate basis, has been Marilyn the human being, the emotional side, the smart, savvy woman who grew from a childhood filled with tough times and then used that savvy against all odds to become a respected actress with a brain who was well-read, intelligent, and loved by everyone who met her. This included John and Robert Kennedy before they threw her aside like, as she once proclaimed, a piece of meat. Certainly Dr. Thomas Noguchi and Dr. Theodore Kerfee of the L.A. County Coroner's Office must be added to the wall of shame for permitting that death to appear as Marilyn kills herself on the front pages of newspapers across the country when they issued the ludicrous probable suicide verdict without any truthful evidence pointing in that direction. L.A. Police Chief William Parker is their partner in crime in the cover-up for not stepping in and doing his duty to provide justice for Marilyn. Even when the Los Angeles City Council approved a reinvestigation of Marilyn's death in the 1980s, this effort was blocked, causing a double cover-up of what really happened on the fateful day of August 4, 1962. Like JFK and Dorothy Kilgallen, Marilyn was subject to the worst the criminal justice system can offer, denied justice for certain. During the years following Dorothy Kilgallen's death, several opportunities have existed where an investigation could have permitted her day in court, so to speak. They include newfound evidence such as 1965, suspicious circumstances surrounding the Kilgallen death scene, two barbiturates in her bloodstream, not one. 1965, alternative cause of death, visceral congestion, Detective Doyle admissions. 1968, three barbiturates in her bloodstream, Broich and Umberger. 1970s, Lee Israel's book, Death Scene Confusion, Allegations of Impropriety by the Authorities. 1970s, HSCA investigation, something fishy about Kilgallen's death. 2007, Midwest Today article, interviews of Sinclair, Simpson, and John Broich pointing to murder. 2016, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much published, fresh information about Kilgallen's death being a homicide with Ron Paticky named as main suspect. 2018, Denial of Justice published, Ruby Trial transcript excerpts exposed pointing to Kilgallen being in danger, fresh information including forensic proof of homicide, detailed proof of Ron Paticky complicity in Kilgallen murder. In early 2017, as noted, this author requested an investigation of Kilgallen's murder by NYC DA Cyrus Vance Jr.'s office. Announcement of that promise of a thorough investigation of Kilgallen's death drew more than 250,000 views to the New York Post online posting. At the invitation of the DA's office, this author then flew to New York City and met with Richard Ramos, the detective assigned as chief investigator, and, while doing so, provided him with a 30-page evidence report. It included more than 40 individuals who had primary source information about her death and pointed the direction toward Ron Paticky as the chief suspect. In fact, during our conversation, Ramos said of Paticky, "I wonder if he sold Kilgallen's information about her JFK assassination investigation to some people," which echoes the comments made to this author, as noted, by the Las Vegas casino boss, with the only difference that the latter said Paticky was compromised by the wrong people. Based on this statement and others, Detective Ramos was quite enthusiastic about his investigation, and to that end, emails were exchanged for nearly 8 months, as included in Denial of Justice. He admitted to sending out subpoenas and bragging to his father about his probe of Kilgallen's death. Unfortunately, 8 months later, in August of 2018, Eugene Hurley, the assistant DA assigned to Kilgallen's death, informed this author during a phone call that the investigation was being halted for the reason, he said, that they had not been able to discover evidence that Kilgallen was harmed in any way. When I pointed to all of the evidence to the contrary, Hurley made quite an alarming statement. "Well, Mr. Shaw, I don't want to argue with you, and besides, we don't know who did it," basically admitting that Kilgallen was harmed and thus the victim of a homicide. More about the exact nature of the DA's bogus investigation which included denying this author documents and witness statements involved with Kilgallen's case, despite a proper FOIL's request, is included in denial of justice. After efforts to persuade the New York Attorney General and the Justice Department to independently investigate the DA's office handling of Kilgallen's case fell on deaf ears, this author took his fight to get her the justice she deserves to the doorstep of the NYPD Commissioner Dermot Shea. It included my having flown 3,000 miles from California to New York so as to meet the commissioner at a Police Activities League luncheon where he was the main speaker. The photo included here was taken just before a Q&A session where I asked him about his view of cold cases in general and the Kilgallen death in particular, with him answering that he did take such cases seriously. While winding down his response, Commissioner Shea invited me to speak with him after the luncheon was over. I waited patiently before approaching and asked him, as a courtesy, if there was someone in his office who I could correspond with regarding Ms. Kilgallen's case so I wouldn't have to bother him again. He thanked me and then asked Detective Jonathan Rivera to step forward and join our discussion, whereupon he requested the detective's business card. Commissioner Shea handed it to me with the invitation to get in touch with the detective when I returned to California. We then shook hands, and I left believing that I might finally get the thorough investigation I'd been seeking for going on 5 years. To my dismay, the commissioner, instead of keeping his word, apparently instructed Detective Rivera to ignore any correspondence since this author received no replies to 5 emails sent to the detective as well as a voice message left for him on July 8, 2020. Waiting patiently until the pandemic scare and the race relations turmoil in New York City subsided, I sent the commissioner a strong letter of protest so he could respond to its accuracy. The commissioner did not respond to an account of what had happened, leading to the belief that he is a liar, but perhaps even worse, he put a fellow officer, Detective Rivera, in a position where his reputation will be soiled, as will the commissioner's. With this in mind, on October 7, 2020, this author filed a complaint with the NYPD Inspector General's office, alleging misconduct toward a private citizen and abuse of authority while demanding that an investigation of Kilgallen's death be initiated since her homicide qualifies on all levels for a probe by the Cold Case Squad. The complaint may be read at tinyurl.com/yxnbler8. All letters lowercase. Regarding the complaint, the perfect recipe for a cover-up by Inspector General Phil Ure and his staff exists since Commissioner Shea is a powerful public servant with a boss, the NYC mayor, who is even more powerful. As of late January 2021, no determination had been rendered regarding the complaint, the facts are not in dispute, or this author's demand for documents and witness statements involved with Kilgallen's case through a proper NYPD FOIL's request. In fact, despite the IG's Director of Communications and Senior Advisor telling this author no cover-up will occur, since this anti-corruption agency that has a long legacy of serving as the independent oversight agency in this city, rooting out corruption and fraud, several requests for an update on any investigation of Shea's wrongdoing had fallen on deaf ears during the 4 months, way too long, since the complaint was filed. If there was a cover-up, contact with NY Attorney General Letitia James requesting a review of the IG's failure to fully investigate the complaint and the FOIL's denial will have been initiated. In addition, this author intends to demand that Congress reopen the investigations into the deaths of Marilyn Monroe, John F. Kennedy, and Dorothy Kilgallen, all in keeping with this quote by acclaimed novelist Lois McMaster Bujold: "The dead cannot cry out for justice. It is the duty of the living to do so for them." What all of these members of the Wall of Shame have in common, depending on their contact with the life and times of Marilyn, JFK, or Dorothy, is no interest in the truth, and thus they continue to perpetuate the falsehoods involved with each of these historical icons. Certainly, it is one thing to criticize them if they had no notice of the distortions of history, but in each case, they do, and yet they continue to turn their back to correcting these distortions. Meanwhile, I hope to shine a light on these three magical people, each of whom should have never died at such a young age. By doing so, I will have provided my own contribution to history, with the hope that others in the future will use my definitive research as a basis for their own research. To that end, in late 2020, I was quite honored that my alma mater, Purdue University, requested the opportunity to be the archival repository for my body of work, my more than 25 published books, research books, papers, documents, articles, videotaped television interviews, and presentations both personal and regarding my research about Marilyn, JFK, and Dorothy. Thanks go to Sammy Morris, professor and director in the Purdue University Library's Virginia Kelly Carnes Archives and Special Collections Research Center, for permitting my contributions to history to be preserved for many years to come alongside those of Amelia Earhart, the First Lady of Flight, and astronaut Neil Armstrong. Regarding the former, Kilgallen, as noted, was a kindred spirit with the famed aviator, and Earhart sent the famous reporter a telegram of support just before she began the race around the world in 1936, a year before Earhart died during her attempt to fly solo around the world. As noted, each woman's deaths happened under mysterious circumstances existing to this day. The similarities between the two regarding not only their aviation achievements, with Earhart's far and away more impressive than Kilgallen's, but each a first for women, but as trailblazers for women's rights, must not be underestimated. Even more amazing is that more than 8 decades after Earhart's plane disappeared over the Pacific Ocean, the world's largest compilation of her papers, memorabilia, and artifacts will be alongside the same sort of historically important collection of not only the books this author has written about Kilgallen, but her own papers and documents, including hundreds of her Voice of Broadway columns, articles, photographs, and other memorabilia. Thus, the most credible information about the two women's amazing careers, and their private lives as well, will be preserved, as it should and must be. How proud this author is to be honored by Purdue, where I spent 5 years and 3 summer school sessions as a struggling student before graduating. Hopefully, my story, as well as those of Earhart and Kilgallen, will inspire those who should never fail to dream. Never fail to believe in themselves, to understand, as Earhart so aptly put it, there's more to life than being a passenger. Mark Shaw. This has been a Highbridge production, read by Phil Thron. Copyright 2021 by Mark Shaw. Published by arrangement with Post Hill Press. Recording copyright 2021 by Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books.